Blog Talk Radio. Good evening. Thank you for joining us on the Wise Women Media, the radio show. That was the wonderful Tina Malia with her song, Heal This Land. We have a great guest tonight to speak to us about how Greens are doing things politically and being the change in their communities, Green Party Mayor Gail McLaughlin from Richmond, California. But before we get started, I'd like to direct you all to where you can find us online at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. Our social networks are linked there. Archives to our shows, please join us on Twitter at Wise Women Media. And on Facebook also, we have a page and a group under Wise Women Media. I want to give a shout-out to Here Be Monsters on Blog Talk Radio, who give us this hour-and-a-half space every Friday night so we can broadcast this show. A list of our sponsors is also on that site, Daughters of Isis, Florida Nature Photos, Power New Media and Public Relations, Roundtree 7, Tarot and Stars, and the Hoodoo Blog. And this broadcast and the other broadcasts on Here Be Monsters are under the Common Projects Network. I also want to direct you all to the website under the GoFundMe link. Feel free to hit us up there. And, you know, just to let you know that independent media is supported by the public and by the listeners. You all are the ones who dictate what you want on these shows. We do not take any corporate funding whatsoever. I also want to let you all know that you can call in tonight and ask Gail a question at any time. The phone number is 213-816-0357. And for you really shy folks, you can join us on the chat room. If you are on Blog Talk Radio right now listening to us and you don't see the chat room, just refresh your screen and it should appear. So I do not see Gail in the queue yet joining us, so I'm going to go ahead and start with another song. This is also Tina Malia, and this song is called Sarva Mangala. We do have Gail on the line, so let me go ahead and click in. Hi, Gail, you with me?
Yes. Hi, Anita. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, well, thank you for joining us. Looking over everything that you've accomplished so far, it looks like you are a very, very busy person. And I just want to thank you for, you know, taking an hour of your time and joining us here. And I've got quite a lot of questions, and I'm sure you have a lot of answers. And I think people are very curious about exactly what the Green Party is in this day of political upheaval when people are very disillusioned with the two-party system. So maybe you can shed a little bit of light on exactly what being a Green Party elected official is and what you do that's possibly different than what other elected officials do that are not Green Party. So I'm going to turn it over to you, and maybe you can answer some of the preliminary questions, like why you became a Green and how you got into politics.
Sure. Thanks, Anita. I'm a member of the Green Party. I agree with the Green values, which stand for things like ecological wisdom and grassroots democracy and equity. I mean, economic equity is extremely important, and social justice and all these values that progressives need to stand for and need to stand for with conviction. I'm a member, I mean, I'm in an office that is won through a nonpartisan race, so our strategy has always been, and I believe this strongly, it could be something that nationwide we should try and build, and that's people coming together, regardless of their party affiliation. I personally believe that the two-party system is totally bought and sold by the corporation. So, you know, my effort has always been to bring those people together that stand aside from the two-party system, or at least in terms of Democrats who see, they really have to be true in their progressiveness and not stand with, those machine Democrats, as we call them, in Richmond. And so that's kind of the alliance. We have an alliance called the Richmond Progressive Alliance, where we come together based on our values. And that's the kind of grassroots organizing we do in Richmond, reaching out to people who share, and I find that people everywhere in Richmond share the values that I bring and other progressive elected officials bring. And it's just a question of reaching them, reaching out to them, being, you know, strong and brave enough to stand for what you believe in and not being afraid of, you know, the corporate attacks that you're going to get, which have happened to me considerably and other progressives here in Richmond. So we just reach out from our principles, and we don't take any corporate donations when we run for office, and we find that when we say that, people are eyes wide open. Wow, you know, these people running have the same values as we do. So that's how I have found the effort in Richmond to get as far as we have, by standing with our values and by making policy based on those values. So I've been in office now for 9 years, and there's been a couple other Richmond Progressive Alliance candidates who have joined me on the Richmond City Council, and there's some progressives who are somewhat aligned with us on the City Council that aren't part of our alliance, and we work based on issues that we feel we have in common, and we're going to move forward together, and we've gotten a lot accomplished, you're right. So it's a challenge. It's a challenge because we stand up to the big corporations. We have the second largest oil refinery in the state of California, the Richmond Chevron refinery here in Richmond, and it's the largest greenhouse gas emitter in the state of California. And they attack us every electoral season. They put millions of dollars into attacking good progressive candidates and supporting Chevron-friendly candidates. So we have to reach out to one another, and we have done that in Richmond, and we think we've set a good model for other cities to learn from. It can be done. I think we've shown that, and it takes a lot of work and keeping at it, and going into 2014, we're prepared to go at it again.
What do you say to the people that do not vote their values, that vote for the lesser of two evils? What would you say to sway them over to voting for their values instead?
Well, I think first and foremost, it takes a lot of one-on-one reaching of people. We do a lot of door-to-door canvassing. And now, of course, since I've been mayor for, this is my going into my eighth year, my last year of my second term, I'm at every community event. I'm at, having constant outreach to communities, meet with every resident and every community group that seeks to meet with me, and I do organize events both through my office but also through the Richmond Progressive Alliance. So there's a lot of one-on-one engagement that happens with the community, and I believe that's the way to reach them. And there are people that don't pay attention to the city events and such, and they only pay attention during the election years, and they get fooled by those candidates that, you know, put up the good talk but are really funded by Chevron and aren't willing to stand by their values or stand by any values. They're simply mouthpieces of corporations, and they're in office or seeking office for opportunistic reasons. So you have to overcome that, and I believe the way to overcome that is on a human-to-human level, and I feel that most people are able to, on a grassroots, on a local level. I know for partisan races, there's that whole debate about, you know, hey, lesser evil and all that, and I've of course, as I stated earlier, have stood apart from the two-party system, so I see that independent route needed on all levels of government. But on a local level, I find that one-to-one engagement with people to really, really be key. And I think on a larger level it is as well, but you have these huge parties that are giving these, you know, these messages that, oh, you know, it's not practical to vote your conscience. Well, I think otherwise, and I think we have quite a movement going here in Richmond who really believes that conscience and values are the way to make change.
Tell me what you think are the most important things that local officials need to tackle in regards to economic equality?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think first and foremost, as an elected official, you have to determine whether what social layer you're going to stand for. For example, are you going to stand for homeowners who have, you know, are on the brink of foreclosure or have already went into foreclosure? Or are you going to stand for the banks? You know, are you going to stand for a community that has health problems, that has suffered from asthma? In Richmond, we have among the highest rates of asthma in the state because of a polluting giant in our city. So are you going to stand for Chevron that likes to paint itself as, you know, a friendly neighbor when we know otherwise? They had a massive fire in 2012 that sent 15,000 people to local hospitals for treatment. So are you going to stand with Chevron and, you know, because they're saying they're going to fix everything and, you know, they pay a certain amount of taxes to our general fund, or are you going to stand with the people whose safety is at risk and whose health is at risk? So it's pretty clear, you know, where I stand and where the progressive movement of Richmond stands, and we've won many victories, like more taxes from Chevron because of grassroots pressure. We won a $114 million settlement in 2010. We got Chevron to back off on appealing their property taxes again through massive amounts of grassroots pressure. People coming to council meetings, you know, in large numbers, rallies, demonstrations, and we've won these victories. But we know, even though they have given us more, or they have provided, you know, what we believe is due us, and that's more taxes, we don't believe it's enough given that they make $26 billion in profits a year. So, you know, the tax struggle will continue. You know, we, of course, the climate change problems that they cause, you know, we fight that, and we do good environmental initiatives in Richmond, move those forward at the same time as we put pressure on Chevron to reduce its greenhouse gas emissions, which are the highest in the state of California. So we have these massive challenges on our hands, and we're fighting them, and at the same time we're carving out this new economy based on green jobs. We have a world-renowned green job training program. We're the number one in the Bay Area for solar installed per capita. We have, you know, we've banned plastic bags. We've banned styrofoam. We do these things with, you know, with really a partnership with the community. And we have pushback from, you know, certain parts of the community. And we work hard and explain ourselves and come to city council meetings. You know, I sit as the chair of the city council, and, you know, I love to see the numbers of people who come with their signs and support our progressive direction, and that puts pressure on some of my colleagues, and we've been able to make the change that we've made thus far with that kind
that
of partnership.
That's incredible work. Can you give us more detail about what's been going on with the eminent domain? I'm sure people around the country would like to hear exactly how that's happening and maybe how they can start an initiative in their community.
Right, sure. Yes, this is a very interesting and well-loved program, and certainly because it's such a needed program. It's what we call it is in Richmond is the Richmond CARES program. CARES stands for Community Action to Restore Equity and Stability. It's really a foreclosure prevention program and a program to reduce blight and restore community wealth. It's been clear that due to the housing crisis, the crash, you know, just the numbers of people that have lost their homes nationwide is phenomenal. It's like $4.5 million. And the wealth that has been lost, and, you know, particularly for people of color, in nationwide, I think it's something like 66% of Latino household wealth that has been decreased. And 53% of black household wealth. So in Richmond, we have a majority people of color community, 40% Latino and 26% African American. So we really have felt the loss of wealth, and we also are very and the reason that I think people of color have been hit so hard is because of these predatory loans that were sent, that were targeted at people of color. And we have a lot of people who had these predatory loans in Richmond. 50% of our loans in Richmond are underwater. So that's something like 66% of our home values have plummeted 66% since the start of the crisis. So we feel it in a major way. And what we are doing is bringing forward a local fix. Because we know this crisis is not over in Richmond or in the nation. I mean, there's $9.3 million deeply underwater throughout the nation. So you have these problems. What we're doing in Richmond is putting forward a program. And this program, we also call it the Principal Reduction Program, the Local Principal Reduction Program. What we seek to do is purchase mortgages, underwater mortgages from the banks. And our purpose is to pay the banks fair market value for these mortgages, and we've sent them offer letters. So far they haven't allowed us to purchase them. And we say to them, you know, please, let us purchase them at fair market value. You get fair market value for these mortgages. If you aren't willing to work with us and sell us these loans voluntarily, we will acquire them, you know, if necessary. We will consider acquiring them through eminent domain. We feel that is our legal right as a local government entity. We will acquire them, go to the courts, and the courts will determine if this is legal, and we believe fully that it is legal. But, you know, certainly the courts will have their say on this. The acquisition of these loans will allow us then to work with the homeowner. The homeowner stays in their home the whole time. We are purchasing these or acquiring these loans on their behalf. We then refinance the loans on behalf of the homeowner, and the homeowner gets an affordable mortgage with a lowered principal and can stay in their home, have money in their pockets because they are now paying an affordable mortgage. They can then have extra money to buy the needed things for their children and frequent our local businesses and keep our local economy afloat. So we think it's really an exquisite program that is a fix that the banks have been unwilling or unable in some ways, because there's some structural problems that are in place for some of these loans. They don't have the ability to reduce the principal because they have investors all over the world that are pooled together in these types of loans that we're seeking acquisition for. So we think it's the fix that is needed, and they haven't been willing to do it. The federal government hasn't been willing or able, or I guess it's more willing, haven't been willing to do it on the part of the federal government, because they could do it very easily, but they could force the banks to really, you know, change the approach here and force them to give the homeowners reduced principal. But they have had some programs, but just a drop in the bucket. So, you know, we figure we're going to do it as a local government. We're going to fix this problem. Right now we have a lot of resistance from the banks, and, you know, we want other cities to join us and stand up against the banks. A national movement of cities is what's needed. So I'm very proud to be representing our city and standing for justice. Again, it is a situation of justice against these big banks who got a $29 trillion bailout from the federal government.
Right. And a lot of other cities, I mean, your idea is marvelous, and I hope other cities sign on to it or get something similar, or maybe through this show contact you directly to find out how to get this started in their communities. So,
sure.
You know, we can overwhelmingly, you know, create a wave going across the nation of cities that are doing this. But what is your take on occupying the homes? I know that adds in a lot more problems,
yeah.
But it's kind of an easier fix, but what would be the difference?
Well, see, the thing with the CARES program, or the what people call the eminent domain program, is that we're seeking to prevent foreclosures. So we're not there are many vacant homes in Richmond that where people have sadly been foreclosed upon, and you know, it's caused disruption for their lives and homelessness in many cases, and people having to team up with other living situations and more crowded living situations. But this is a we see the next wave of foreclosures about to come. Even the industry itself is saying that 2014, although to some extent foreclosures have been reduced, they're predicting an increase in foreclosures because the banks are have dragged out the foreclosure process for a long time on many for many homeowners, and they're at a point now where I guess they consider it an ideal time to, you know, finish up the foreclosure process. So people are going to feel you know, the loss of their homes, and we want to prevent that. So in this case, we're wanting to keep current homeowners that are suffering, that are hanging on by their fingernails. Some have quit paying their rents, and they've defaulted. Others are managing to pay these inflated mortgages, but at what expense? They're not buying their children, you know, what they need. They're not fixing up problems in the home that need repairs. They're really, I get the emails and the phone calls and engage with residents all the time who tell me how hard it is and how they're going to have to walk. They're going to end up, losing all their credit if they're foreclosed upon. And so we want to prevent more harm. You know, it's the do no harm approach of we are taking as a local government. The homes that are already foreclosed upon, we want to help in that regard as well. We have another program that we're going to be considering where we may be working with a nonprofit to purchase some of these homes and rehab them into affordable housing for perhaps families that were foreclosed to come back and have an affordable mortgage to reoccupy, if you will, their homes. I mean, I think Occupy Movement has done some phenomenal things, I know that there have been some efforts underway to, seek, I guess, I forget what the terminology is called, but to actually just, take up residence, if you will, in vacant homes. That hasn't happened in Richmond, although we have worked very, very closely with the Occupy movement. We had Occupy Education march through Richmond and stay at one of our local churches. I marched to Oakland with Occupy Richmond and Occupy Oakland to protest the horrible actions of the police against the Oakland occupiers. And we have ongoing speakouts by Occupy Richmond who consider me their ally, and I most certainly am. My view of Occupy is that it's the radicalization that we've been waiting for. It's something that's kind of spread out now into different sectors, Occupy Education, Occupy, there's something called Occupy Forum that I just spoke at in San Francisco recently. So we want to nurture those movements because that's how change is made.
Right, right. It's what you were saying is I've always called that house rich, pocket poor when you have a house, but you can't afford to buy groceries, and it's really the plight of so many of the poor these days. I know in Miami they have quite an effort for occupying homes for the homeless, but I'm really hoping that this is a catalyst for people to get in touch with you to find out how to get this going. Now, you've also had a big fight in your area, as you touched upon earlier, with big oil, as we have down here in the Gulf region. So fill us in on what Chevron's been doing and how you've been fighting against Chevron.
Right, yes. Chevron is the big one percenter in Richmond. I mean, they are a $26 billion profiteer. And ever since our progressive movement has started in Richmond, for decades there's been an environmental justice movement. But starting in 2004, we really had a surge of progressive ideas kind of circulating and a progressive movement galvanizing in the city. And that's when I first ran for city council. Chevron attacks candidates brutally in campaigns. They attack me in all three of my campaigns. They do personal attacks. They support Chevron-friendly candidates, and they do it with massive amounts of money. In the 2012 elections, we had two wonderful candidates that were two wonderful candidates who were running for city council, and they wanted to see a clean, healthy city. Chevron attacked them, terribly, looking up and distorting things about their past, and they put billboards up all over for the Chevron-friendly candidates. $1.2 million was spent in our city of 100,000 people. People talk about a senator or a congressman having $1 million or several hundred thousand dollars thrown against them. Well, imagine on a small city, we consider ourselves a nice-sized city, 100,000 plus, about 106,000. But that's a lot of money to throw at local candidates. Billboards were filled with Chevron-friendly candidates and glossy mailers coming into people's mailboxes every day during that campaign. They spent nearly $1 million on my reelection campaign to try and defeat me, but I think they attacked me so brutally that it had a reverse effect. People, recognized what was happening, and they identified with me. So it can work against them, but we see what's happening as we go into the 2014 elections. They're already starting. In fact, they started last year with putting out mailers, trying to frame themselves as a friendly community neighbor. And right now they've just started a new campaign. They have billboards all over the city. talking about all the wonderful things happening in Richmond that we, the progressives, made happen, and then they're putting the Chevron logo on it, like Richmond, you know, beautiful city of 32 miles of shoreline that we fought to protect against developers who wanted to, you know, completely destroy wetlands on the shoreline, or, you know, Chevron's parks, Chevron City of Parks, when we fought for the open space parks. So they're trying to brand Chevron as this civic identity and Richmond, you know, progress. And so we're having our work cut out for us to counter that, and we do it by reaching out one-to-one to people, going door-to-door. Of course, I'm in office, so I reach large numbers of people and always make it clear. Chevron has to stop polluting our air, but it also has to stop polluting our democracy. And that's something we'll be putting out there big time this season.
Yeah, I think we spoke a little bit about this in the pre-interview, how the big oil companies, Chevron, BP, and the rest of them will come into communities and really make these civic-minded efforts. They co-opt them and make them their own, and they really are just, they're really just there for the big bucks, and they don't care about anything else. But if they can take credit for something, sure, they're going to do it, you know. But tell the listeners about the importance of finding alternatives. I mean, hopefully at some point, we can turn away from, you know, having to use fossil fuels. I saw it myself on a show, I think it was on the Discovery Channel, where a solar-powered car was made from scrap, and it had a solar panel on it, and they drove it. I mean, it probably cost $50 to build, and they drove it 50 miles with the one solar panel. And I thought, oh, my God, that's amazing. Anybody could do that at any time and just do it. I could drive to Orlando in that thing, you know. And
absolutely,
I thought, aren't people doing this, and why aren't people insisting on it? And it's because these big oil companies have such a foothold and a stranglehold on our democracy, as you've said. They're funding the politicians. They're paying into the campaigns to keep the campaigns going. They're finding the friendly candidates. And as you said, they purchased the democracy, and then we no longer have that. So what is Richmond doing in regards to solar and other forms of green alternative power and energy?
Right. Well, we have promoted solar for a long time, our progressive movement, and we've made great progress. I was a co-founder of a grassroots organization in 2006 called Solar Richmond, and it took off on its own after I got reelected. You know, this was a, you know, something I brought forward as actually a council member, so it was after my first election as mayor that Solar Richmond kind of took off on its own as a nonprofit and contracted with the city to do green job training, solar installation training. And as a result of Solar Richmond's work to train, and they, and one of the key things is they worked with at-risk youth and oftentimes returning parolees. Richmond has had come from a history of high crime, but we've reduced that massively as well. We this year we've had the last year we had the lowest homicide rate in 33 years, reducing our homicide rate 66% since 2007 by really addressing the roots of crime, you know, the roots of problems, rather. We do have a good police department that actually works well with Occupy, and, you know, they have a good reputation with occupiers in the Bay Area. A police chief that came to a demonstration in, we had a fight, I forgot to mention this, and I'll get back to the solar in a minute, but we had a huge fire at the Chevron refinery in 2012, which sent a black plume going all over Richmond and the beyond Richmond. And what happened was 15,000 people were treated at local hospitals. 19 workers barely escaped with their lives. And so we're actually, the city of Richmond is suing Chevron as a result of this. We have regulators, charging them huge amounts of millions of dollars, but we know it's far greater than that. We have to change their corporate culture and their culture of safety. So this all goes on simultaneously while we promote the good things like the solar. So the Solar Richmond became a wonderful effort to not only educate people about solar, train our residents, train returning parolees, giving them a chance to be a part of the new economy and placing them in jobs throughout the Bay Area, and working to get our residents to put solar on their rooftops. We had from some of the stimulus money that we got while it lasted from the Obama administration, we utilized that for solar rebates. So lots of people were able to get solar panels on. We would like to see a lot more happen, but we did become number one in the Bay Area for solar installed per capita. So we see the need to transition, of course, away from fossil fuels toward renewables and electric cars, solar, every form of renewable. We actually have joined with Marin County, which is a county near Richmond, near our county of Contra Costa County, and are part of a community choice aggregation where our residents have a choice of getting our electricity from renewable sources rather than the big electric company PG&E here out on the West Coast. So we're unique in that regard. So we have a lot of unique efforts underway. We're seen as a leader in the Bay Area in terms of our green focus. We banned styrofoam. We've banned plastic bags.
Wow, that's great.
We work hard, but it's a collective effort.
Now, I have some questions in the chat room and some comments. Joanne states, the problem is evidenced by our family in Pennsylvania and West Virginia and a lot of other states, is that the frackers and the miners are bringing jobs to the community. And I'm going to add to that, they bring the jobs to the community usually in pretty impoverished areas. With the big oil, that doesn't seem to be the case, though. With big oil, it seems like they bring their own people in to do these jobs, where with the fracking, it's exactly opposite. The fracking, the coal mining, the mountaintop removal, they're bringing jobs to an already impoverished community, so these people are willing to grasp at any kind of job to get a paycheck to support their families. And then Joanne also adds, we have countless family members who have died from coal-related production, this keeps people and families captive, basically, by continuing to offer jobs in the coal mining. Coal mining, again, mountaintop removal and anything having to do with the fracking in the communities. So what would you say to that? Are there a lot of fracking efforts in California, or have you seen a lot of that in your area or close by?
Not close by, but in certain parts of California, yes. We have various projects that are being fought in the Bay Area that have to do with that are interconnected. It's all interconnected, the extraction and the process of extraction, and then it ends up in the refineries. So we definitely feel a connection to all of this. And the issue of jobs is a big issue of concern, of course. In Richmond, that's another thing that, when we are fighting against Chevron to stop harming our community, people Some people who line up with Chevron will often say they provide jobs, but the fact of the matter, in Richmond at least, is they're not hiring very many Richmond residents. Only 5% of their workforce are Richmond residents. So we bring that truth out. In terms of situations where they are actions like fracking are bringing jobs to communities and much needed, it's a hard challenge, and jobs need to be provided. I think the organizing effort has to be twofold. One, to have people stand up against these harmful activities that are putting our planet at risk and ultimately putting our human race at risk by that. So it's education, but also to help people find different forms of employment. And even things like another effort we're pushing in Richmond are worker-owned cooperatives. So, you know, to
right.
encourage people to come together, I think organizing is key. Education, organizing, and seeking out those opportunities, putting pressure on the city councils or our town councils to say, provide the jobs, come up with the creative ways of helping your residents find jobs in, you know, new types of businesses rather than the fracking oil giants efforts. So it's a big problem, but people have, I mean, the organizing effort, I believe, is truly the key, and I do believe that low-income people, which we have, you know, that's, Richmond is a low-income community, a working-class community. And we know we're stronger when we unite with one another, and we've been able to come up with worker-owned cooperatives. We want more. We've been able to come up with bringing in those good solar companies or those solar companies that are willing and to hire our residents, and we require it. Every person that got a solar rebate had to make sure they worked with a solar company that hired Richmond residents. So we can, you can
imagine. Oh, wow. That's great. That's like a, yeah. That's just like a checkmate. I mean, it makes
yeah.
sense, doesn't it?
Right, right. So it really, you know, if you put your heads together, you know, I think we all are creative people and among a progressive community and among a working class community. We can come up with these ideas and put the pressure on the needed people and make things happen. It does take work and commitment. But I think we have to do it. We're at that point in time and in history that if we don't do it, who will? And if we sit back, we'll only see things get worse, and that's not an option.
Right. I've been reading a lot of articles lately about the crucial situation with California's water. Can you fill me in on any local efforts? What's happening in California, and specifically what's happening in that Bay Area where you are?
Well, actually, we're in this situation of a drought right now, so we're just really needing rain big time. Situation with water is always, you know, is a big problem, and during this time, it's even more so a problem. I haven't been as actively involved in that. We do have a clean water campaign in Richmond, a local one. We have 32 miles of shoreline, so we're right on the bay. We have more shoreline than any city along the San Francisco Bay, and we've had some issues with an aging wastewater treatment plant that has. This was before I was on board. The council was leaking or putting contamination into the bay, so we've been having to work on that to address clean water in that regard. In terms of the issues of just accessing water and knowing we're at a point where we're in a time period where there are so many aspects of water that need to be addressed, but whether it's, you know, wastewater, having enough water, making sure some of the water that we get goes to Southern California, and then there's the need for water in Northern California. So, but conservation, I think, has been a key effort among us, many of us in Northern California. I think Northern Californians are far more clear on conservation, need for conservation. Southern California, I think, are more known for the big lawns and such, and more, you know, less.
Right.
That's not to say that's characteristic of all Southern Californians, but you know, there's a little greater consciousness up here in Northern California for conservation policies. But I guess I'm not the expert on water, so I can't give you a whole lot of information.
Now, here in this state, you know, we've had some pretty dangerous situations with water, and a lot of it has to do with the political situation, but the new fracking, possible fracking that's going to be taking place in Naples, Florida, unless we stop it, is right on the Everglades. And, of course, you know, millions of taxpayer dollars are going into a restoration program for the Everglades, so it doesn't seem to make any sense, but I'm sure you agree with me that the new oil is going to be our water, so that's going to be the red-hot commodity in the coming decades.
Yes.
And it's not going to be just your state and my state, but every state, I think, we're going to come up to a shortage. And then we have to deal with the contamination and everything else. So now we're going into the last, I think, 5 minutes, 10 minutes of the show. And I wanted to talk to you or have you note what you envision for the next 5 years with the particular area that you live in and what you would like to be a part of?
Ah, good question. I would say that my key focus and I think journey that I would like to help further is really to bring about more distribution of wealth, to bring about a more equitable economy. It's clear that we have such disparity in terms of billion-dollar profiteers and people who, you know, just can't even pay their rent or, you know, buy enough groceries, and people out on the streets as homeless. So, to me, you know, working toward equity is an absolute necessity. And that means taking on the banks. That means taking, you know, forcing the corporations to pay their fair share of taxes. We do this in Richmond, and we're going to keep doing it, and we think it makes a difference because, first and foremost, we are able to help raise people's consciousness. And that, of course, as people's consciousness is raised, the other thing we're doing is we're putting a minimum wage increase on the ballot here in Richmond. We want to raise it to either $12.20 an hour or $15 an hour. So we really believe putting more money in people's pockets, having people advocate on their own behalf for decent wages will bring about the kind of consciousness that could help it address the other problems that we face. I mean, of course, we still are going to be fighting Chevron and making sure they don't refine heavier, dirtier crude. We have our environmental justice movement. So that's going to be a big effort in our climate change effort. Combining movements is, you know, for economic justice, social justice, and environmental justice. That's what I see happening in the next 5 years with, you know, wanting to put my effort into it, but with the effort of many, many people. And just one last thing toward that end, we had a demonstration in Richmond, a march of 3,000 people marking the one-year anniversary of the fire. We marched from BART, which is Rapid Transit in Richmond, Richmond BART, to Chevron Refinery. And the theme of this march of 3,000 people, and it was people in Richmond but also from outside of Richmond and actually in places over across the nation came, the theme was equity, fair taxation from corporate oil companies. It was environmental justice. It was climate change. So it was social justice. Why should a city, majority people of color community, be faced with the pollution of this giant oil refinery? So combining movements, I think, captures the imagination of people, and that's how change is made. That's how we had the women's movement gotten as far as we've come, which isn't far enough. And the
right.
civil rights movement and, you know, the anti-war movements, which clearly aren't enough yet either. We still have wars waged, you know, just raging across the globe. So, you know, the union movement, all of this, we need to come together and come together in large masses of numbers across the globe. So I hope the next 5 years sees some galvanizing of people power.
Increasing awareness and collective consciousness, I think, is on these issues and so many more. That's what I see. And I see the Green Party in the United States here being a big part of that, where people can read. I just encourage people to read the platform and know that we're not a party of just, you know, being concerned about the environment, that our platform encompasses all of the issues that you have spoken about and that affect us all. I know a lot of people that are in California that are very, very concerned about the situation with Fukushima. Can you give us some words on that in regards to so many people stating, including scientists and experts, that a plume is currently hitting California from the failed Fukushima reactors in Japan. Can you shed any light on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is clearly a lot of concerns about that, and rightly so. It's, again, a question of what you said, educating and consciousness raising and having people stand up for themselves, for ourselves, to find ways to, you know, mitigate and decrease harm that has already occurred, and to stop further nuclear power plants and further, you know, negative activities that could cause further harm. So it's, I know a lot of people are working on that. It's not something that in our local community has organized around, although I know there are residents within Richmond who have joined efforts, but they haven't kind of been centered in Richmond. But yes, I mean, this is another example of wrong priorities, putting priorities on profits through, you know, going forward with this, these terrible and outrageous nuclear power plants, when we know that safety cannot be achieved, you know, in terms of that type of energy, rather than putting the money and effort and resources into the kind of renewable energy that really offers a future for humanity. So,
exactly.
I think that fear is there, yeah.
We're getting into the last few minutes of the show, and do you have any, let me see how many more minutes we've got, just a couple minutes. Can you give us any closing comments?
Yes,
and what you plan to do in the future, or like maybe run for another office, or what's your plans?
Well, right now, you know, this is the last year of my second term as mayor, and in Richmond you can only run two terms, so this will be my year of terming out in Richmond, so I certainly intend to work as hard as I can leading Richmond throughout this last year, and I'm very dedicated to this local work that I had a role in moving thus far, you know, so far, and I want to see it continue. So I'm giving very serious consideration to running for city council to be an ongoing member of the Richmond decision-making body. And, of course, I'm engaged with supporting upcoming candidates that I feel are going to continue the work that I've been involved in as mayor. So there's a progressive mayoral candidate that I hope to see move forward very soon. And so that's, you know, looking toward the next local election as a very, very important one. You know, as far as above and beyond that, in terms of any other political office, that we'll see when a few years pass if that's something that I would give consideration to. But I know people have asked me if I would run for other offices. But right now I'm focused on Richmond, and I do want to give consideration to another term, this time as a city council member.
And one last question. What do you, you incredibly busy woman, what do you do for fun?
What do I do for fun? I'll tell you, we have a lot of fun because we have a very engaged community. We have parties. Our Progressive Alliance has parties. Even our fundraisers are parties. I'm a lover of the arts, and I think the arts have a strong role to play in progressive change. So, you know, whether it's music concerts or art exhibits or you know, various other multimedia experiences in the art world, these are things that I'm very active in, and my husband and I are out engaged throughout both with our work and taking some time for ourselves to enjoy. We go camping once a year. We're able to do that and enjoy the beauty of the outdoors, solitude, quiet. So we're finding our way to lead a balanced and joyful life in spite of the hard work. So sometimes it's a challenge, but we're so committed, and we think that that's the true joy in life, to build a better society. So I think that gives me the real joy when we have successes and bring people together.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the show with me tonight. It was great, and I loved hearing how you're doing it, and hopefully what you've said can, you know, go on towards others that are considering a similar run in their own community where they can incorporate some of those same things that you're doing in Richmond. But thanks so much for giving us a little bit of your time. And,
thank you, Athena. Can I give an email address if anyone wants to email me?
Certainly. Go ahead.
Yes, if people just want to email me at mayor@officeofthemayor.net. It's a very simple email, mayor@officeofthemayor.net. And, you know, I could share information about the Eminent Domain Program or about our fight for justice and accountability from Chevron or any of the other renewable energy initiatives we're doing. I really believe that networking, and thank you for providing these opportunities for many people to hear each other and share and connect further. So progressive media plays a strong role in how we can make change.
Exactly. And I just wanted to let people know that you can find us again at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. Make sure you, if you like what you heard, to hit up the GoFundMe link and fund independent media, since we take no corporate contributions. And to see the Green Party's platform, all you have to do is go to gp.org and click on platform. It's not a quick thing to read through. You can do a little at a time, but it covers all the issues that Americans are speaking about today. And there's so much information there. I really do believe once you read the platform, you can't go back, because the platform really encompasses most of the values that Americans have and want. So until next week, Friday night, 10 o'clock on the Wise Women Media, the radio show, thank you, Mayor Gail McLaughlin for being with us tonight, and hope to have you on again. And good night, everyone. I'm going to close with Tina Maglia, and
thank
the song
you,
is. Thank you. The song is Sarva Mangala.
Narayani, Namo.